Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Sports Drink Network. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a pre-trade deadline, middle of a losing streak edition of The Bird Calls. I am David Grubb, and I'm joined by our usual panel, Kevin Berrios, David Fisher, and editor-in-chief of thebirdrights.com, Mr. Ali Cosell. Gentlemen, as we are recording this, it looks like the Pelicans will fall to their 10th consecutive loss on the road to the Dallas Mavericks. We're not going to get into the game. What we're going to get into is just at this stage of the season, here we are 7 days away, 1 week from today, as we record on Thursday night from the NBA trade deadline, February 9th. I'll start with you since you're the boss. Is there a need at this point to make a trade in order to pursue success this season? Is it worth staying and trying to basically maintain what you have because of what's going on? Or do you start thinking about the long-term future of this team as you head into the trade deadline?
I'll be honest with you. I thought I had the answer for most of the season, but up until like a week or two ago, I don't know. And with this loss of the Mavericks tonight, which has been probably rock bottom, and you're hoping it's rock bottom, you really don't know, right? When is the team going to rebound? Is it going to take for Zion Williamson to get back in uniform? When are they going to get in rhythm BI back? When are they going to show force out there, right, on either end? Because we've been watching Luka Doncic go one-on-one against the Pels with no double teams. They basically have, 10 drives in a row freely close to or if not to the rim. So no trade is going to save that. No trade is going to turn around that type of effort and lack of focus. So that's why I'm saying, if we would have had this pod, say, 2-3 weeks ago when the losing streak kind of started, yeah, we could have talked about easily, right, the holes on this roster, or what we were seeing, why suddenly they've dropped off. But now it's just morphed into something so much more that you've really got a question, like you kind of raised to me, David, is it even worth making a trade at this point? Can you save this season? Should you try and save this season? Should you risk, as we were talking amongst ourselves, maybe breaking up what's still, I think, considered a good locker room dynamic, right? The chemistry. Because if you make a big move, you're going to obviously have to say goodbye to at least one, maybe two good key, you know, rotation guys that a lot of New Orleans fans have fallen in love with. So I don't think there's a right answer here, especially not now. And unfortunately, we're a week away from the deadline. So anybody's guess is as good as, you know, anybody else's.
Kevin, it's so hard now because you look at where they are. There are a number of factors that affect the thinking at this point, not just the record itself, which now they'll, after this loss, they'll be under 500 for the first time this season. They're already in 10th. They could go lower in the next couple of days or so while we're still waiting, next couple of weeks or so while we're still waiting for the return of Zion Williamson. If that's the case, again, what's the approach? Because there are only 31 games left in the season. And to get to 45 wins, this team would have to win 19 of those 31 games. Zion Williamson alone, I don't think is going to put you on that kind of corrective course. What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think it's a difficult situation. I mean, obviously we know when Zion, you know, you don't have to explain that when Zion comes back, it's going to fix some things. But when you look at this team, that one of the main problems is there's no offensive identity. Like right now, there's nothing. Like, you can't figure out what they're trying to do offensively. And again, defensively, you know, there's still no rim protection. And like Ali said, you're watching this game tonight and Luke is eating everyone alive and he's still being covered in single coverage. You know, it's like Kobe's 81 game, you know, like it's crazy and it doesn't make any sense. I think that I know you and I for sure. I think everybody here has been pounding the table for 4 years saying what this team needs is a rim protecting center and a veteran point guard that doesn't necessarily have to play all the time, but has to come in there in moments like this where there's no offensive identity to get creative and to create things and set people up. And it's just the same error over and over and over again. Obviously having an incredible player like Zion creates, you know, covers up a lot of that issues, and, you know, having him and BI out at the same time for such a long period of time was brutal. And BI still hasn't gotten back to where he was before that injury. So it's just looks like a mess out there. But I still think that those are the main things that need to be fixed. And, you know, you could go back from David Griffin's tenure and his hits are as great as his misses are bad. And we deal with both of those constantly. You know, like, I feel like, you know, I always said from the very beginning, they should have hired a coach like a Willie Green type to come in with these young guys and develop a culture. And I think Willie Green's been really great at that. And the idea was you come in, you have that guy, and then you hope that he grows into a game managing tactician that can be very creative and bring you to the next level. But if he doesn't, he's done the right thing and laid that foundation of culture and all of that. And then you replace him with that tactician guy to take you to the next step. But we're like 2 years behind that because we wasted time with Alvin Gentry, who clearly wasn't a good head coach. Then we did the Stan Van Gundy experiment. And now we're like in the middle of the second year with Willie Green, and we still don't know if he's going to be that kind of guy. But with the timeline being skewed because of how dominant Zion is and how much of a star Brandon Ingram is as well, then you add CJ McCollum, you kind of like need to be in that third year where you're making that leap. And we looked like we were, injuries came, we fell apart. But then you see, like, if you had that coach that was that tactician, he would be able to create interesting offenses that got the best out of the players that he have available, because we do have good players still out there on the court. Obviously there's glaring holes at defensive five and at point guard. And then we have those net negatives that keep getting played, like Jackson Hayes and right. Devontae Graham. So there's all these issues. In my opinion, I think you fix for the long haul and not make a panic move, because, like, what's the point in battling to get into the play-in or the eighth seed when it's going to set you back in the future, when you can really just fix those major holes and build around your core? Now, if you decide you need to do something because your stars can't stay on the court and radically reshape that way, that's another thing. I'm not ready for that at the moment, right. But, you know, I understand that idea too. But I wouldn't make like a splash move that's just going to fill in a gap and give up a bunch of assets, especially considering that we might fall out of playoffs and be in the lottery and right. have a good draft pick to add to this team.
Fish, you know, one of the things that makes this now, this trade market even more strange is because it was different when the Pelicans were in the top five. When you're in the position that they're in now, like Kevin said, your thinking has to be different, because I don't know how high you can climb in these standings based on what we would think is a reasonable, again, 31 games, a reasonable amount of losses for the Pelicans. If they, yeah. if they get to 41 wins, 42 wins, now that would be, you know, kind of, I mean, there's no way to 50. There's no path to 50 anymore. So anybody thinks that's on the table, stop it. You're trying to get to 42 now to have a winning season. If that's the case, in a seller's market, it's not a buyer's market because there are 13 teams in the West who are in it. There are 10, 11 teams in the East who are in it, and they can't sell yet. So the premium players, the things that players that would make a difference, the cost is that much higher. Doesn't make any sense in a season where now, if you're healthy, you could possibly still win a first round series depending on matchup. If you're healthy and you get in the playoffs, you could still steal a series. Does it make sense to give up assets for a season where now you know for certain, pretty much here, if you're being realistic, this is not a finals team. So do you waste assets trying to chase something that can't happen this season?
That isn't how I would approach it. And when we talk on specific trades, I think it's more that they need just atone for the sins of the past, man. That would be my approach this trade deadline. And that is to understand that, like, they should have moved on from Jaxson Hayes and Devontae Graham sooner. I know we on this podcast were advocating that before the trade season opened in July. And I still think that's the case now. I understand that they may have to spend something in the course of assets to get off of the money that is owed to Devontae Graham. But I think easier to get off of a contract now when there are teams who have decided we're not winning this year than in the summertime where everybody has some hope that, hey, things could break right and we could win games. It's a lot harder, you know, to use their cap space at that time or to make some kind of uneven trade. So that would be the approach that I made, because there are still teams that, even though, I mean, there are teams ahead of the Pelicans that will probably sell or will attempt to sell.
Do they have what you want, though?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, what do you want from the Utah Jazz, you know? But the Utah Jazz, I think, are definitely in a position where, hey, if they could get, like, any kind of, like, first-round pick or a couple good second-round picks, they're... You know, the store's open. The stuff's on the shelves. Come get it. But we can talk about specific trades here in a little bit. But I don't think the big trade for, like, the biggest, flashiest name that's out there on the market, I don't
like
think
a CJ McCollum level deal is not on the table.
I mean, people are going to sell me or try to sell us on OG Anunoby being that guy.
I don't think, but I mean, would you put, I don't think we would say as a player, the status of OG Anunoby, even if you're infatuated with him, it wouldn't be in the league considered the same kind of move as picking up a borderline all-star like McCollum, would it?
No, I mean, I'm a big OG fan. I'm not a big fan of giving up assets to add him to this team with, like, when you look at the chemistry, you look at the assets.
But I don't want to get too deep in on the details with the trade yet. We're not doing that. But I'm just saying,
but I think your question, I do think he's like a hairline of a tier below a CJ McCollum because of what he does defensively and how skilled he can be offensively as well. Obviously, CJ is one of the greatest scorers in the league. But OG is one of the best wing defenders and versatile defenders in the league. They're very different. And defense isn't flashy. So you don't think of defensive players in that way, unless they're having these, like, crazy shot blocks and stuff, like these highlight reel kind of defensive plays.
But do you think, let me say, like,
yeah, I mean, look,
it's not the same kind of chips on the table, is it?
No, because, I mean, look, here's an example. The Athletic, they just posted something today. They called it the NBA trade deadline big board, right? So right. The top players. Number one, OG Anunoby. Number two, Kyle Kuzma. Number three, Fred VanVleet. Four, John Collins. Five, Bojan Bogdanovic. I mean, no. To answer your question, no, I don't think the type of players, the caliber, are necessarily out there, even just like what was last year. And apples to apples, you know, is CJ McCollum considered better than Kyle Kuzma and OJ Anunoby? Yeah, I think so, right? I mean, he's been a 20-point scorer for the last 9 seasons, and while he's got his obvious deficiencies, he's a stalwart. He was somebody you were getting just for more than the point production, right, for the locker room presence. And we saw, right, for at least a while, of how much benefit was derived from bringing him in. You can't say that about any of those five names I listed could be a game changer in the locker room, could you? So, no. To answer your question, there doesn't seem
might
to be
a negative
kind of
changer. Might be negative. Like, I don't think that OG Anunoby's history would suggest that he's going to come in and be a super huge positive.
I mean, agree. The other thing, too, is you look at we gave up Josh Hart was the best player that we had to give up to get CJ. And we gave up, what, one first round pick? Whereas you look at what the asking price is for OG, where they're asking for, you know, two of Dyson, Trey, or Herb, and then multiple first round picks. So like, it doesn't make much sense asset management wise right now, because Minnesota and Atlanta screwed up the league with their crazy overpays for the players they added this offseason.
It's such an odd situation now, because again, at the beginning of January, all of these assets that the Pelicans have, the player assets, and like you said, Fish, even going back to the offseason, a guy like Jackson or a player like Devontae, their value was higher. It's the same thing almost to me as repeating the Lonzo Ball mistake, in that you know you have a future with this player. You're trying to force this, even though it's not working. And yet you've gotten to the point now where you've made it so that whatever you get back is going to be less than what you should have gotten. And I think the Pelicans are going to end up getting less for Jackson Hayes, less for Devontae Graham, because now people have seen them for 50-plus games, and they've seen for Jackson out of 4 years, no real improvement. So the mystery, at least before you had some level of mystery, and you could say he's really exciting as a tradable piece, now you're forced to use those first-round picks in ways maybe you didn't want to. Ollie?
Yeah, I mean, I've got nothing to add to it because you completely nailed that. I mean, you have
they should have done it earlier, but yeah, like I said, like now you just, I mean, you can just sit on it, but you like just atone for your sins, man.
No, but the reason is you can't sit on it because Jackson Hayes, let's face it, the likelihood of him getting a second contract with the Pelicans is near zero. But the fact that they're going to continue to operate as an over the cap team, you kind of want to turn his salary into something, right? Along with Devontae Graham, who you're trying to offload. So, right, you're playing with, say, and let's throw Garrett Temple in there. So you're playing with like $20 million worth or so of money that could tangibly go and help this team next season. But if you sit on it, then you're going to bypass that, right? If you don't take advantage before this summer. So to me, it is important to make a move now from that perspective alone.
Well, then let's get into some potential moves. We know the players that are most mentioned. We know the teams that are most mentioned. Fish, I will let you go first because I know this has been plaguing you for nights upon nights upon nights, trying to figure out how to make the right deal.
So my idea of the right deal, and I tweeted it out earlier, because we're kind of just putting together tea leaves of the guys that might be moved. So Utah has pretty much said, hey, we'll take, you know, a good second round pick or like a pretty protected first for Malik Beasley. And Malik Beasley can shoot the ball. He's like Devontae Graham, except for he's taller and the ball goes in the hoop more.
And a better defender.
And if you told me that I could get that, I would get that. The other part of this part of the trade, because it's kind of like a two-parter trade, but it only works together. So you're going to have to send in my deal, you send like a lottery protected first round pick to Utah with Devontae Graham for Malik Beasley. Now, so I've already gone over the fact Malik Beasley is an upgrade. The second half of it is if for whatever reason, Malik Beasley does not work out, if it's just, you get him in the locker room and you can't figure out how to get him minutes or, you know, his defensive limitations are such that you just can't find the minutes for him, His contract next year is a team option, which means the Pelicans are essentially paying a first-round pick to have the possibility of Malik Beasley next year, or the possibility of wiping off all of Devontae Graham's money and Malik Beasley's money. So you have like a Beasley rental, plus you have not necessarily the cap space, but the tax space that you would need next summer. The second half of this is the guy that I've been trying to trade for forever, which is Isaiah Hartenstein. He signed with the Knicks, but when the Knicks eventually get healthy and when Mitch Robinson comes back, Hartenstein projects to be their third center behind both Robinson and Sims, who's really broken out for them. So it would be Garrett Temple, who's just salary, and Jackson Hayes, which is just another young big for them to maybe get a look at or not play like they do with Obi Toppin. And a second round pick for Isaiah Hartenstein, that who's not really going to be in their rotation. And so a lot of people are like, well, why would the Knicks do this? Well, the Knicks are scrubbing salary off of their books next summer because Hartenstein has a guaranteed deal next summer. And
Randall's deal comes back up again shortly, I believe.
Yeah, but so what I was trying to say is it's a couple things that they manufacture. They manufacture cap space because Hartenstein's deal is guaranteed next summer, and none of the money that they're taking on extends beyond this year, because Garrett Temple's contract is non-guaranteed and Jackson Hayes is a pending free agent. And you're the New York Knicks and they're having a pretty successful season, and cap space or luxury tax room, depending on how they decide to use it, is way more valuable when you're the New York Knicks in their market than you are when you are the Pelicans. So that's why I think that they would do it.
Don't be trying to sell that shit. I'm gonna as a former Knicks fan, I know the cap room ain't worth nothing. That cap room means they
believe it. The media will tell you that it matters. Everybody believes it. So
40
the
years. Knicks are
unused cap space is the cash considerations of the Knicks.
There you go. So, but yeah, like so that's my sell on it. So essentially, the Pelicans end up sending out Devontae Graham, Garrett Temple, Jackson Hayes, a heavily protected first-round pick, and a second-round pick from the Bulls. And what they get in return, which is essentially three guys that shouldn't be in the rotation whatsoever, is a wingish-sized player that can actually shoot. Isaiah Hartenstein, who's a legitimate, he's an NBA big man, he can protect the rim. And you get the option next summer that you cannot pick up Beasley's contract, and you can have the luxury tax space, or you could pick up his option and you could trade him again. And he would be an expiring contract at that point. So, you know, somebody might see him as the missing piece. I could definitely see a team like, say, the Lakers, who desperately need shooting, saying, yeah, we'll fork over, you know, some kind of draft capital to take Malik Beasley off your hands. So that's the deal that I would do.
Ollie, we'll move to you. And you have the Toronto Raptors and the myriad of players that folks have decided the Pelicans should poach.
Yeah, so I focused on OG Anunoby. Right, why not? Seems like most of the Pelicans fan base wants him, likes him. So let's have a look, right? Because he supposedly is the cream of this crop, of this deadline. So the trade I concocted is the Pelicans obviously get him. They send Herb and Devontae Graham. You've got to send somebody to Toronto, plus two first-rounders. Which ones, it all depends, right, on who they're looking for. But I also involved the third team, right, to make salaries work, because I also figured Masai, he's not going to want Jackson Hayes. So I'm sending Jackson to the Hornets. And the Hornets, they have a glut of centers, not enough athleticism. Maybe they'd be interested, right? Remember when we used to try and trade Jackson a year ago? And even before then, I think, to the Charlotte Hornets, just because they need a player like him, right? So that's where he's ending up. And so Charlotte is sending Kai Jones, who I know is one of Charlie's favorites, to Toronto, a rim protector, a legitimate 6'11", right, type of center. So they've got Herb, Kai, couple first rounders. Masai might like that. And then Nick Richards comes to the Pelicans. And I'll tell you what, Nick isn't all that impressive, but when you start looking underneath the hood, he actually kind of is. He could maybe be a backup center for this team. I found out that he's considered the third best rim protector this season by something called relative defensive field goal percentage. Bismack Biyombo, number one, Jaren Jackson, number two, Nick Richards, number three, Walker Kessler, number four. So he sounds like somebody that's kind of interesting. But again, he's behind Mason Plumlee, Mark Williams, and Charlotte. And he's not even getting playing time now, right? Which doesn't make sense considering he was kind of effective. So, you know, that's kind of the deal. It works. And here's the tricky part. When you're making a deal with Toronto, the Pelicans and Toronto are very both close to the luxury tax line. And I guarantee you neither team is going to look to go over it. See, that comes into play, and you've got to figure out a way to make salaries come awfully close to matching. So that's why I kind of came up with this one. What do you guys think?
I like Nick Richards. I always have. I was interested in him in the draft. I think it's weird, like, you know, because Steve Clifford. I always, you know, he always reminds me of Boss Hogg, but he just won't play young bigs. So it's just bizarre to me that he does have like guys like Kai Jones and Nick Richards and the guy from Duke that are all very athletic rim protecting bigs, and he just won't play them and develop them. So, like, you know, moving them, although it's really Plumlee that's been in the rumors mostly, but and maybe they're gonna get rid of Plumlee so to force him to play these young guys. But yeah, if we get come away with Nick Richards, I like that. I mean, like I said, I love OG. I look at him as a guy who is also often injured, is, you know, better than any of the, like, we have Herb, we have Trey, we have Dyson. He's better than any of those three guys right now. I think Trey's ceiling, it could be better than OG's. But I think what he does to this team temporarily gives you a slight boost, but I don't think it really addresses the fundamental problems with this team. So that's why I'm not that interested in adding him. Sure, if they added him, they're adding a very good basketball player that will help in the short term. I just don't think he elevates and fixes the fundamental problems of this team in the long term.
I just want to hop in to say that the Pelicans have cut the Mavericks lead, well, for a very brief second, to single digits, but then they gave it right back. I do want to jump in on OG Anunoby, because some of the argument for trading a young guy or two is we can't pay everybody. So let's trade for a guy that's making $18 million and is only under contract for one more season after this. Like, I don't see how that is logic.
Yeah.
And then the other part of OG Anunoby, that is a little bit of a weakness in my opinion, is he's represented by an agency that.
Sorry, guys. Hang on.
No. That's great, because it's perfect. They hate Clutch Sports as much as we do.
Well, it sounded like Kevin was getting assaulted for a second. I was like, oh, damn.
So, I mean, they're represented by an agency that the Pelicans haven't necessarily had a very great relationship with. And you're going to be trading real assets for a guy that you're saying, as soon as you get here, essentially, we're already talking your next contract, right? I mean, because he's up for a contract in a year. So
two more years, right? But it's a player option that he's going to.
Yeah. He's going to turn down unless he has some kind of catastrophic injury. And then the other part of that Kevin touched on is, like, why are we trading for a dude that isn't an Iron Man to go with our glut of dudes that, you know, can't give you 60 games a year? How does that solve anything? Those are my, you know, concerns on the OG front. When he's healthy and more. I love him as a player. Like, I really do. I love, like, his ceiling. I love the fact that, I mean, he could guard 1 through 5. Like, the Pelicans could use him as like, I don't know, like a Ferrari version of a Robert Covington back when Robert Covington was in his prime. Mm-hmm. Like that could potentially be on the table. But the thing is that we have a history that he's not in the lineup all the time. And we have the, well, we can't pay everybody. So let's get a guy that's going to be an unrestricted free agent and cost a whole lot more rather than keep all these guys that at least we can, I mean, we can make them restricted and it'll be expensive, but we can keep them here. Like,
yeah, let me add,
we can make sure that they're going to stay.
Yeah. Let me add one more, Fish. And this is something I said at the very beginning. I remember in our group chat raising the point of the fact that he's supposedly been unhappy with his role in Toronto at least once. And now sounds like maybe that's at play again. So you're coming here, you know, the pecking order, Zion, B.I., C.J., and then the leftovers, which he would be at best fourth. How's that going to be any better of a situation for him if that's indeed a problem in Toronto? So yeah, to everything you said, I add that too. And trust me, I'm not on board with this either. And with this season kind of dwindling down to the point of where you have no championship aspirations, mm-hmm. right? Grubb mentioned 50 wins is off the table. Usually you have to be a top three seed, right, to make it far, to get to the finals. And that's looking like it's not in the picture. So why not get that legitimate look at this entire roster that you intended to do earlier this year, but you haven't because of injury. So now truly evaluate all whatever 10, 12 guys that you like and see which ones work, right?
But trade away Devontae Graham so that Willie Green stops playing him.
I said the 10 to 12 that we like.
I just want to be very clear on my ones here. And it's not because like Devontae Graham's a bad person or any of that. Cause I know that like some of the vitriol online gets unnecessary and personal. Yeah. He's not a good fit on this roster, and we all see it and recognize it. And we shouldn't shy away from that. If, you know, Jose hadn't popped like he did and the Pelicans didn't trade for CJ McCollum, like the situation would be different, but it is what it is. And the Pelicans just do not have the capacity to deal with another small guard that needs minutes that also isn't like a big plus defensively and also has lost his shot in the Bermuda Triangle.
And is also blocking Kyra, but maybe not after tonight.
Also, Fish, don't compare players to Ferraris anymore. That's
please, no. Yeah, no more Ferraris.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, man. He was my favorite.
Shout out to Jamal, right? He liked that one.
Yeah.
So, Kevin, you're up next.
All right. So, I made two trades. One of them's like really ho-hum kind of thing. I'll throw it out there real quick. It's just kind of dumping Devontae for a useful big. It's Devontae and as many seconds as Toronto needs for Chris Boucher, who's not amazing, but he's a big man who blocks shots, rebounds, can occasionally knock down a three. He's better than Willie Hernan Gomez. He's way better than Jackson Hayes. The contracts are basically similar, except for Devontae last year is very small amount of guaranteed money. So that could be appealing to Toronto just to get rid of Boucher's contract for a couple of seconds or however many that takes. Like I said, not splashy, but it sort of helps in one glaring area of need. Anybody want to comment on that one real fast before I move to the more splashier one?
No, I don't mind. I like that one. I like his game a lot, and he's a veteran. Like, again, it's not about his size, but it's about, I mean, look, he can do the things that you're not getting from Jackson Hayes. He can do the screen. He can roll. He can finish at the rim. He can block shots. He can run the floor, and he can attack the offensive glass. So if that's what you're getting, then yeah, that's an upgrade, and I'll take that.
Yeah,
yeah. I tried and to like make I a said, deal.
It's the biggest area of need too. Sorry, Ali, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say I tried to make a deal involving both Boucher and Anunoby. It just became way too, you know, too hard. Basically, it didn't seem like there's no realistic scenario involved. But that's why I like it, Kevin. Good job.
Okay. Yeah, and then the other one is a bit more splashy. It's a three-way deal with the Pelicans, the Hawks, and the Suns. The Pelicans come away with Clint Capella and Cam Payne.
The Hawks get DeAndre Ayton and Jackson Hayes. The Suns get Willie Hernan Gomez, John Collins, Devontae Graham, a first from the Pels. Initially, when I did it, I gave 2 seconds from the Hawks, but I think probably those 2 seconds have to come from the Pelicans. So what that does, it gives you a real legitimate defensive center that rebounds, set screens, rim runs. I know there's, you know, worry about fit with Zion and spacing, but I think you look at a lineup with Zion, CJ, B.I., Trey, and Clint Capella, and that could be something that's quite formidable because Capella's rim running is fantastic. And then Campaign, he's hurt right now, so you buy him cheap while you can, and then he fills that veteran break glass and emergency point guard for when the offense finds these lulls or when these other guys are out and you don't have Zion's gravity to feed everybody off of. So you have a guy that can legitimately create offense. And then, you know, Monty, it's well documented, Monty Williams and DeAndre Ayton's issues. The Hawks get a more defensive-minded center. More offensive-minded center who has a nice mid-range game that could work well with Okongwu. Which, you know, obviously if we could get Okongwu, that would be the ideal situation, but I don't think that's...
I don't see the Hawks giving that up.
Oh, I think we lost him really quick. I think he...
Well, if we get Kevin back, then we'll let him finish that one. But
I can comment on it.
Sure.
So I like the Capella fit with the Pelicans because he gives you a lot of the things that Jonas does in terms of, like, he's a monster. Like, he is a rebound vacuum, and this team needs that. But he doesn't give you like the post offense. Like, you can't just dump it into him and be like, man, we need a bucket. Go get us a bucket. Can you just manufacture us 2 points? That's not what you're going to do with Capella, but he does give them a lot of, you know, vertical threat in the pick and roll, which mm-hmm. this team sorely lacks, because as much as, you know, Jackson Hayes provides highlights, Jackson Hayes doesn't know how to properly set a screen and roll.
He leaves the screen before he touches the man.
So, I mean, that just, it doesn't work. So, but Capella is a superb screen and roller. And Zion Williamson might be the only guy on the Pelicans I trust to throw an alley-oop. So you can see, in my mind, I see a whole lot of 4-5 pick and roll.
I think Dyson can throw a lob. I think he's just nervous right now. Like, everything with Dyson just feels like he's a little nervous.
Sorry, guys. I don't know where no I cut off. I just realized that once I finished saying my spiel, nobody reacted. So
I think we got you right at the end because you were rapping. And so we were just doing some analysis of it and our reactions to it. And Fish was wrapping up. Go ahead, Fish.
Yeah. So, like, I like the idea of Capella. I don't like Campaign's face. Like, I just don't like his face.
Well, no one does, but...
But, you know, he's expiring next year, so you get him off a little bit earlier than Devontae, and he's only $6 million instead of 11.5.
Yeah.
All right, then I guess it's my turn.
It's real quick. The Pelicans have cut it to 4 with 50 seconds left.
Yeah, how many minutes has Luka played since he got hurt?
Luka, I'm not doing that. Yeah, I'm not playing that game because
it's the perfect storm, man.
They kept fighting because Luka left. You know, like it's they showed who they were in the first half. That's the problem. You know, you had your opportunity. Yeah. You needed to show the energy in the first half. You had to come out. They knew that, and that's my problem. Is that they knew you had to start well on the road. To give yourself a chance. And that's been the thing during the streak. And everybody's like, it's one quarter. It's one. No, it's not one quarter. It's not one quarter. Because it's been the fourth quarter. It's been the first quarter. It's been the second quarter. It's been stretches of every quarter. So, yeah, I mean, like, close losses, okay. Well, fine.
But I just missed a midi attempt with, like, 23 seconds left.
What's he shooting tonight again?
Would have cut it to 2.
What's he shooting tonight? I mean,
9 of 19.
Well, that's his best performance so far.
That's only 3 turnovers too.
And people got all over me because I said the turnovers were a bigger problem than the shooting.
giving the ball up without the opportunity to offensive rebound it is always worse than at least throwing it at the basket, man.
Right. So I just said he was turning it over too much. Okay. I went with a three-team deal. It does not solve all the problems, but I went smaller scale in order to, like, I think the deal helps for the playoffs this year. It does not bring any long-term money that should be prohibitive, and I think it does shore up in some areas by giving some maturity. So in my three-team deal, the Pelicans send out Devontae, Jax, and Garrett Temple to Detroit and get back Bogdanović and Isaiah Livers. Livers, you know, a second-round pick, power forward.
Like Michigan guy, yeah, play with Franz yes. Wagner.
Love him. Tough, the dirty work kind of guy, and the Pistons have a ton of guys up front. You know, a lot of power forward center types, all in that 6'8", 6'11 range. So I think they could give one up. And then as I'm sending Kyra to Toronto and getting back Thad Young. I'm pairing Kyra with maybe a second round pick or whatever or something, but I'm getting Thad Young back for the playoffs. He's at $8 million. I need a veteran that can score in the post if Zion's not on the floor. And if Jonas doesn't have it going, a guy who's not going to give me problems defensively, who can defend multiple positions, who can sit and not bitch and moan. So, you know, I think he comes off the books again. You can either move him in the offseason for a relatively small price, or you can hold on to him and you've still got a veteran presence in your front court for another year.
I like it. I really like the Thad Young part because I love him. You didn't mm-hmm. mention the fact that dude can pass.
Yes, he can.
Like he could really distribute the ball. He would be a great. He would be somebody that I could really see like mind melding with Herb Jones and helping Herb Jones unlock like his ability to cut and see when his man has turned his head. Thad Young's similar size to Larry Nance.
Mm-hmm.
But I think of Thad Young as being bigger.
Yes, he is.
And like he plays bigger.
He's beefier for sure. He's stronger. He's thicker,
but, yeah. but at the same time, like you could play both of those guys together. You could play mm-hmm. either one of them with Zion. You could get weird and
play all three of them as the front court.
You could play either of those guys with Jonas. Like it gives you a lot. Like I hadn't even thought of Thad Young, and now I'm like completely on board. I know Bogdanović is the thing that everybody's going to jump on, but like Thad Young as your fourth big around these guys, I love it. I'm head over heels for it.
Ollie, did we lose Ollie?
It looks like it. No, I see his.
He's probably muted as usual. Yes. Ollie,
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, hold on a second. I'm dealing with my dogs. Hold on. Kevin, you go.
Good cameos tonight.
Well, I mean, I think I like the deal.
Pelicans cut it to three. I'm just gonna keep on chipping it in. The Mavs have the ball. They're looking for a miracle in the last 6 seconds. But
I mean, I really do think, though, that deal, it. You know, for you go into the postseason, you've got shooting out of Bogdanović, and he is also a hell of a passer, as we know, is great in a pick and roll. We've seen him destroy, you know, he's shooting the ball fantastically this season, and he can also move without the basketball, which is something that the Pelicans don't do well. And then I said, like, if up front, you get two active guys who are going to help on the offensive glass, and like you said, add passing. They are not, you don't have to do stuff for them. Thad can hit that mid-range jump shot. He's expanded to the three on occasion. You're not asking for a lot of them, but he can do it if you have to, if you ask him. And he's still producing at his at his age. He's still producing quality numbers. So, and you'd be asking maybe 10 to 12 minutes a night out of him. So, like, yeah, I think it between if you get him and Livers together, that makes your front court a lot better because Hayes, Temple, and you're not playing Billy. I think that they all give you those two guys approximate that and give you more.
I really like Livers. I really like that young. I like Bojan. I'm not as high on adding him as other people are, but I'm not going to be mad at it. Like, I understand, you know, the need for shooting, and he does more than just shoot too, because he has a playmaker. I'd be happy with that trade as well. Plus, I mean, I think all of our trades had a very similar theme in that addition by subtraction. Just by getting certain guys off the team, this team gets better.
Yeah, I think you have to weed out some of this. And the only way you do that is not by – we have to remember, the Pelicans still have a first-round draft pick this year. You know, one way or another, I don't think that they're going to give it up completely unless there's a major deal. But you still have players to pay coming down the road. The back end of your roster is supposed to be vets who can contribute. And I think that's what you get. And if you're getting rid of the younger players who aren't contributing, and that's what Jackson Hayes is a sunken cost at this stage. And Kyra, unfortunately, as much as I like his game, it just doesn't seem that his timetable, you know, makes sense anymore. Because the biggest thing I think we're learning now from this season is you're not counting on a decade of Zion Williamson. You know, the NBA alone, we don't see teams staying that long. But physically speaking, we already knew he was probably a 12, you know, to 15-year peak of an NBA player. Well, if that's the case, you got to try to win that championship now. And I think that's what you've learned out of the Pelicans, is that you still can't wait for all these kids to grow up. This team has to be more mature, because there's still – I think the youth is another one of those things that contributes to these major lulls. Guys?
I agree. Like, you're just preaching at that point, man. Do you want an amen? Because I can give it to you.
I don't feel like I'm speaking into the cavernous abyss. So I just want to make sure. But, you know, where do we feel? I mean, ultimately now, you know, this
game just sucks, man. The team sucks right now. I don't know what's wrong with them. Like, it sucks talking about them. Like, it sucks watching them. Like, I loved this team. Like, I loved this team. Like, the first 2.5 months of this season were freaking incredible. And Zion's throwing freaking windmill dunks at the end of the Phoenix game. And in the span of like 3 weeks, it's just like the wheels are completely off the rails. The team just feels like they don't, like, I know those guys love basketball. I don't feel like they love playing basketball with each other anymore. And like, I don't even know how you fix that with a trade deadline or an all-star break. I don't know.
Think about this, when you're 23-12 and then suddenly you lose a whole bunch of games, it's going to impact, right? Not maybe necessarily your love of playing with one another, just playing in general, I would think, right? I think they all really genuinely like each other. They still act like friends all the time.
I'm not saying that they don't like each other. I'm saying, like, when you watch them on the court, like, there used to be like genuine, like, you could feel and see the joy of them playing together, and it's gone.
The ball had energy, and it doesn't now.
Yeah.
And I don't know how I like a coach can say, like, we got to play with joy and we got to, like, let the ball have energy and it's going to find, you know, the open man and et cetera. And you can say all of those things, but, like, it all feels forced and it just sucks right now. And, like, a lot of what I think we're seeing on Twitter and stuff like that is just, man, it sucks for the fans right now too. It really does. Cause, like, everybody wants this team to win. And there's a lot of dudes that, like, I love these guys. Like, I love rooting for a lot of these guys.
Yeah.
And it's not happening. And the last podcast we recorded, we were talking about Western Conference Finals and 50 wins.
Yep.
And that was like 3 weeks ago. That's all I got, man. Like, they're breaking my heart.
Yeah, I think that part, because I think people think that we take some type of sick, perverse joy when the Pelicans are bad. And I don't think that people understand how far from the truth that is. A, when you're a journalist and you have to do this, like Ollie and I, when you have to write day in and day out about losses, that is not fun. There are only so many ways you can write about losing. Like it sucks. You never get tired of writing about a winning streak. It gets old real quick writing about losing. You hate it. You hate going to games when you're in the media and the team is losing because nobody wants to talk to you. Nobody wants to deal with you. The energy is bad. Mm-hmm. We don't enjoy it when the team is losing. And I don't recall a single person on this, out of the four of us before this season being negative about the team. I think every one of us walked in and said, at the very least, this is a team that should win a first-round series, advance to the second round, push somebody, and maybe they have a shot at getting to the conference finals. That was pretty much unanimous. So being realistic and saying, right now, I don't know where this ends, to me, is not abandoning the team. It's not crying. It's not being negative. What it is it's the evidence that you have in front of you. And right now, I don't know where you would find some evidence to make you say tomorrow's the game that they're going to win. I can't feel that confident. When you look at the schedule, guys, I'll just be real like this. What do you think is the next time that the Pelicans will be favored to win a game? When you talk about the Lakers coming in this weekend, and then after that,
Hawks.
Yeah, I mean, the Hawks, maybe?
No, I don't think so.
You're not going to be favored against the Kings. You're not going to be favored against the Hawks. You're not going to be favored against the Cavs.
You're not going to say this. I'm just going to jump on it. I just want to jump really quick. Mm-hmm. If they come out and they do, like, they get ahead and the Smoothie King Center gets hopping and they're ahead of the Lakers, I do believe that this team is completely capable of just hopping on the energy of the fans, getting it to victory, and the fact that Brandon Ingram loves beating the Lakers. And if that's what needs to happen, it will bring me just so much happiness this week.
There is a big issue with this too, is that that game is happening the same night as Crew de Vue. So with the team being bad and Crew de Vue happening, you might see a lot of Lakers fans in the crowd instead of Pelicans fans.
Yeah, because what was it? They had like 10 sellouts in their first 18 home games or something like that. It's not, now local fans aren't going to be coming until they start winning.
You've lost five in a row at home, and it's the Lakers on a Saturday night during Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not going to be I mean, look, the last time we were in the Smoothie King Center, the upper bowl, it was already starting to get to the point where the upper bowl seats were getting empty before the
game. I mean, I think it's going to be sold out, but I just don't think it's going to be like full of Pelicans fans like it would have been.
And I mean, and plus it's a lot of people who are coming to see LeBron get closer. And that is going to change things. And I think, and right now, the way New Orleanians are, the way Pelicans fans are, this is not a negative again. They don't respect bad effort. So if the Pelicans come out and start putting out a bad effort early, the crowd will let them know. Now, if they turn it around, again, it's a forgiving crowd and they'll get behind them. But they want to see the effort match their compassion, their caring for the team. And that's I think that's been what's so problematic too as observers, is that it doesn't feel like they're willing to do whatever, quote unquote, on the court to win a game. Nothing crazy, but just that.
I was going to say, so what you're saying is the fans keep the energy that the team has.
There's no sugarcoating it. That's 15 losses in the last 18 games. I mean, that's almost a quarter of the season, right? I don't know.
I don't even think like the worst teams in the league like had a stretch that bad.
We've talked. I think I sent in the group chat today. Yeah, the longest losing streaks in the league, and the Pelicans now are in sole possession of the second longest losing streak this season. Every other team that's on that list is a team that is going to the lottery. Every other team on that list is going to the lottery. So, good teams don't do this. Mm-mm. That's the thing. Good teams don't do this. They don't lose 10 in a row. As bad as the Lakers were when they didn't lose 10 in a row. They didn't get to seven. You know what I mean? Like, so it, that's the part. It's like, you're losing more games in a row than the Magic. You're losing more games in a row than the Hornets. You're losing, and you're saying it's because Zion and B.I. are out. But these teams were playing without LaMelo Ball, and they have, you know, less talent, or they're playing without this guy. And they have, all of them aggregate, the teams that we're talking about have less talent, and yet none of them have had a losing streak this long. Something is broken beyond being injured. That's that. It's that simple.
Well, right. Mike D'Antoni's not earning his money as an offensive consultant.
He is not. He is not. This is not 0.5.
It is see, not Charlie, I can see Charlie sending the GIF. I can see it.
Man, guys, I think we've beaten this one into the ground now. It's depressing. It's sad. But we remain optimistic. There's still, again, 31 games to play. Anything can happen, but expectations change. We will be back, certainly, if a move gets made before the deadline, and we will be definitely be back after the deadline to analyze what the Pelicans did or did not do. Any final words, Kevin?
Pack your bags, Jackson. Please, please. I can't wait for him to be off my team.
Fish.
Man, please just freaking beat the Lakers. Please. Please. Please.
If you could get one win in the month of February, that's the one. That's the one. Home against the Lakers, got to have it.
It's Ollie. The Falcons game.
And Grubb, you're always so spot on with your math. I know how smart you are. You just said there's 31 games left, but this losing streak has even fried your brain, dude. There's 29 games left.
29.
They're 20,
okay.
They're 26 and 27.
Yep. Okay, now it's 29. Yeah, you're right. So 29 games. So that again, to get to 41 wins, they got to go 15 and 14 at this stage. I don't know if they can do that. I don't know if they can go 15 and 14. Because this month alone has, what, 10 more games? And Zion won't be back till after the All-Star break?
Most likely, yeah.
So you figure if they go this month 4-6? Maybe. You hope?
And there's going to be a riot. Let's face it. They finish at 500. I know it's a five-game improvement over last year. But look, people are not going to be happy with 41 and 41 in a play-in.
Which if they end up in the play-in again, yeah, it's not going to be pretty. Nobody's going to care about the injuries or whatever. It's going to look like – and like you said, around the league, and I think that's the thing, is we're going to have to hear the shit again from around the league. That's what's going to happen. Yep. Until then, ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad we left you on such a high note. I hope that you do not go and drink any
– I'm going to jump on. Whoa. I'm going to give us a high note, man. You know what the last – 18 games have taught us that Zion Williamson is a freaking MVP candidate. Because if you take him off this team and it's this ass, and he was on the team and it was that good, if anybody needs to make a case for being an MVP or an all-NBA player or whatever, Zion Williamson and the Pelicans have just made it for Zion Williamson being this god-awful the moment that he disappears.
Bro, you got
Zion Williamson is awesome.
Zion, please. Please, Zion. Please, brother. Whatever you got. If it's like in the Little Giants, if somebody is at home rubbing milk into your hamstrings, you know, every night, whatever it takes, brother. Whatever. Whatever you need. You know, call somebody. I don't know. I can't help you with much, man. But if you need something, we'll do whatever we need to do to get you back on the court, bro. This team certainly needs you. Until the next time, for David Fisher, for Kevin Berrios, Ollie Cosell, and myself, this has been The Bird Calls, and in the words of our friend Preston Ellis, please, let's go, Pels!
'Thank you for listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.